Hello, and welcome to our program, Interviewing with Patrick, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Matthew Thompson, and today I am here with
Patrick Glines
from Guide Dogs of Texas, and we're going to be talking here on OWL Radio. So, how are you doing today, Patrick?
I'm good. How's your morning so far?
Can't complain.
Yeah, cool. Yeah,
very nice day. Weather's getting a little bit better in San Antonio. So, yeah, let's get started with some questions.
Great.
All right, so one of the first things I wanted to ask was, what's going on at Guide Dogs of Texas these days?
Yeah, thanks for asking. We've actually got quite a bit happening going on right now. So first, we've got some dogs in their formal training process and a couple apprentices working with them. So working on getting them, learning all the skills they need to be qualified guide dogs. We've already had a couple dog person team graduate this year. We're looking to do probably at least one more later in the spring here, and then we'll have a few more graduations in the fall. So really working towards, that's our core mission of getting dogs in the hands of people who are blind or low vision. Currently, I've also got my apprentice Lawrence driving pretty much all over Texas, and he's visiting current and potential future clients. So really making sure that we've got an elevated approach to working with clients and providing that top-notch client services.
I see. So I guess, do you drive out to clients normally, or do they come to you?
We do. We go visit our clients in their homes, and it's for people who are interested in becoming a guide dog user, wanting to learn more about it and going through that interview process, all of the training with the dog we do in the client's home. But we also provide, and what Lawrence is mostly focusing on now, is a high level of aftercare with our clients. So instead of just a, here's your guide dog, goodbye, good luck, call us in 8 years when you need another one, we put a lot of effort into working with our clients after they graduate to make sure that everything is going as optimally as possible. So that's one of the things that really helps set us apart, I think, is that elevated level of customer service that we provide.
Yeah, definitely. That sounds really nice just to know that, like, y'all will go out to the people and help them with all that. I think that excuse me. I think that does set apart from, or set you apart from, a lot of other people.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's really important that we put a lot of time and effort and energy into the dogs, and the clients for sure put a ton of time and energy and emotion into that dog. And we want to do everything we can to make sure that they're working as optimally as possible and that they're as safe and efficient as possible.
So. Right. Cool. So how long have you been with the organization?
I've been here just about a year now. I originally came in to oversee the operations side of things. We'll chat later, I think, but I'm come from the technical side of the house. But then about last May, I was graciously offered and accepted the role for the CEO.
All right. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. It's been, it's an absolutely incredible opportunity. I'm humbled and blessed to have my board believe so strongly in me and give me this opportunity. I'm really lucky.
Nice. All right. So, along with that too, you know, how long you've been in the organization, do you think you can give us a little bit of a background on you?
Sure. I'm sneaking up on 30 years in the industry, which is, it's an absolutely unfathomable number to think about. I began working in the kennels. It was a big guide dog school in Oregon, and I was scooping poo and hosing kennels and, you know, brushing and bathing dogs and providing all the basic care. From there, I received my apprenticeship, which was a 3-year process to learn to become a guide dog instructor, and then became I was a production guide dog instructor for a long time. So training the dogs how to do the work and then training the clients how to work with their dog. I received a degree in orientation and mobility in 2009, which is, it's the other side of the house. It's using a cane typically to navigate the world without vision, because I really wanted to have a full understanding of blind rehab. A lot of the work I did was really focusing on training the next generation of instructors, and really, really enjoyed that work. And it was a lot of fun to see the young people coming in with the energy and enthusiasm and passion. In 2015, I moved into management and started doing managerial work. And I've been really lucky to work at a couple different schools in the United States. I've spent some years working in Australia, worked in New Zealand, and even did a stint in Chile. There are no guide dog schools in Chile, and a foundation there was trying to get a guide dog school up and running. So I went down there and worked with them to try to help get that that school up and going. So that was a really, really wonderful opportunity. And then, like I said, just over a year ago, got a call from Guide Dogs of Texas, and they were looking for somebody in operations, and it just seemed like an opportunity that I couldn't pass up. So here I am. I also work as an assessor for it's the International Guide Dog Federation. So it's a membership body that oversees basically quality control at guide dog schools. So at least once a year, I will travel as part of the federation, and I'll go really do a deep dive into an organization to make sure that they meet all of the standards that is required to be a member of the federation. So.
All right. It's really interesting to hear about the international work you've done as well, Australia and Chile. As somebody who's been to Chile before, I definitely know firsthand they have a lot of dogs in a lot of their cities.
It was a really challenging environment. There are dogs everywhere. There's a lot of strays, and the environment isn't really well set up for pedestrian travel. So it was incredibly challenging, but rewarding for the work that we did as well. But yeah, it was a very different world. And what I really appreciate and what I learned from that was I had to look at things differently. And what was working in the US and had worked in Australia, we needed a different approach in Chile because of the challenge of the environment. So, and related to that, the foundation I was working for that ended up not working out, but the gentleman that I was training to be an apprentice there really got his passion lit for guide dog work. And about 4 or 5 weeks ago, he started working for me now here in Texas. So he's here working for us and continuing his education and learning how to be a guide dog instructor. So a lot of good came out of that.
Yeah, definitely sounds like it. I love to hear about that community outreach that goes way beyond, you know, our country itself, because I had no idea about the just the far-reaching, I guess, scope of guide dogs in general. That's such a really, like, fascinating thing to hear.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think I've been in this industry a while, so it's a passion of mine, but to just see all the different challenges that different environments face, and it's easy to sit and say, hey, this is the way to do it, but if you haven't seen and experienced different environments, you haven't had to face the reality that, no, there's a lot of adaptations that need to be made in different countries. So, and Chile was absolutely one of those learning experiences for me.
Do you know if you'll ever go back to Chile, Australia, or anywhere else?
Nothing's ever off the table, but I have to say I'm really happy with the spot that I'm in right now and the opportunity that I've been given here. So I'm here in Texas for the near future, but long term, who knows? So
I see. All right. So you may have talked about this a little bit before, but I wanted to kind of ask, what got you into the field of, you know, guide dogs?
Yeah, this is one of my favorite stories to talk about. Several years ago when I was in high school, more than a couple years ago, I had a really good friend who was starting to experience vision loss. And so through high school and then through into college, we went to the same university. I was with him as he was going through that sight loss journey. So I really got to experience it from a different perspective. I remember, we would drive him to specialist doctors to do these really technical laser surgeries on his eyes, and just being around all of that. Ultimately, they were not able to save his vision, and he did go blind. And so from there, he went to an organization where you go live and you learn to live as a person who is blind. So they teach you cooking and cleaning and, you know, how to navigate the world. Like, that's the orientation and mobility piece where they teach you the cane travel. And I just was a party to witness that. And then when he graduated from that, he decided he was going to get a guide dog. And I thought, oh, that's cool. I like dogs, so I support that. And when he was getting his guide dog, I went to visit him at the organization and was just really overwhelmed. Like, this is, it was incredible. It was working with animals. It's helping a population with disabilities, and it's teaching, which are all things I'm super passionate about. And, like they say, the rest is history. When he graduated, I grabbed an application and sent it in, and that's what really got me in. So I love the dogs. They're amazing. It's amazing to train them and work with behavior modification and to see all of the things that they can do. But it's really the people that I am in this for. And Jay's my kind of my North Star guiding light, right? He's the reason that I'm so focused on quality and improving performance of the dogs and all of that, because I've really got that personal connection. So, and he and I are still friends to this day. He actually texted me last night. They're looking to come out and visit us here in Texas. So it's been a really, really fascinating journey.
Yeah, it's great to hear, especially just knowing that y'all are still keeping in contact and
yeah,
the inspiration is moving forward, like, you know, through there. I always did really love the idea of, or I guess just guide dogs in general, because it's one thing to help somebody who's visually impaired, you know, be able to move through life. But I feel like with a dog, you at least have that companionship as well.
Sure.
Just kind of a way to have a connection to another living being as you're moving through.
Yeah, absolutely. It's working with a lot of clients, they'll say, if I'm out with my dog, I've got another pair of eyes. I've got another brain that can help with decisions. And, I've had people say, oh, if I'm lost, at least I'm getting lost with my dog. You know, I've got somebody to be lost with. And so, yeah, they can provide a bit of a social connection and a sense of confidence, I guess, if we get lost, I got a partner to get lost with and somebody that can help make decisions. That's one of the things that we focus on in training too. We actually do a lot of exercises that teach the dogs not just the mechanics of the guide work, but how to think and how to make decisions, independent of the handler. So it makes it really fun and really challenging. It's a tough job.
Yeah, I can imagine with so many different dog breeds and so many different personalities that can come with the dogs themselves.
Sure.
Just a lot of wrangling to do there. And yeah, that does lead to my next question. So whenever you have like dogs that are being, you know, let me start over real quick. So what kind of requirements are there to qualify a dog for guide dogs?
So for the dog to qualify, we put it through a list of paces it's an assessment that makes us feel confident that the dog's got the capability and the skill set to be a guide dog. So it's a lot of observation and work. It's a few blindfold routes, which is where the instructor's staff will actually put a blindfold on and work the dog on a prescribed route. So we get a more real life type, view of how the dog's doing without the handler being able to visually cue the dog, which as hard as we try, we still do sometimes. So it's good to get a blindfold route or several to really make sure that the dog is pure. And then as we're working with our clients and we're looking at, okay, so if somebody wants to get a guide dog, what are the qualifications for them? One of the primary things that we're looking for is that they already have a current level of mobility. So you don't have to love the cane, but you need to be able to demonstrate that you can get out of the house and you know how to purposefully get from point A to point B and have some routes that you can work a dog on, right? Mm-hmm. So I like to say, with the working team, the handler is the pilot. He's ultimately responsible. They're the one making the decisions and really flying the plane. And they're also the navigator. So, and this ties with that current mobility. They need to know, okay, I'm going to go to the doctor's office today. So I need to leave the house and we make a right turn and there's two street crossings that are controlled, by stop signs. And then we make a left and two streets up to Main and that's a lighted crossing. And like cross there, turn left, and the office is on the right. Like, they need to know how to navigate that. The dog is not a GPS system where you can punch in the coordinates into the harness and then kind of mentally check out while the dog gets you there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the role of the dog in that is the safety officer. So while you're the pilot flying the team and you're the one that's navigating, the dog is there to make sure that you're doing it safely and you're getting there safely. So, some of the other things is, do you have the ability to get out and work with a dog every day? You're going to be getting a young, active, probably Labrador, that's got a level of energy that you'll need to get out and do routes every day. And do you have that purposeful work for the dog? Make sure that they're getting the exercise they need, but also keeping them mentally stimulated. And by working, you're keeping the dog in practice, right? That the dog needs that repetition. They need that work to maintain their skills. So those are just a couple of the things that we're looking for with a client, but those are two of the most, the primary pieces that we're looking for is somebody going to be successful with a dog.
All right. I see. And it's funny you mentioned the, blindfolding yourself and having the dog lead you, because I wasn't really familiar with how you would train dogs for that, but it's funny because in my mind I kind of thought, wouldn't it be funny if they actually did blindfold themselves and just kind of let the dog, lead them into walls?
We actually do blindfold ourselves, and hopefully the dog's not leading us into walls, because if they are, we got a problem. But yeah, the blindfold is it's not absolutely perfect, but it's the best way I think that we have to really get a pure assessment on whether or not the dog's doing their part of the workload, that we're not visually cueing and helping the dog, because the instructors are visual people. That's how we travel. So it's natural that we rely on those cues, but we need to learn to not do that as instructors. And it requires a lot of focus. And while it's really awesome to have a job where we're out walking typically 7 to 10 miles every day as we're training with the dogs, like it does take a lot of focus while you're walking to make sure, okay, what does this dog need right now? You're always looking ahead. Like, what are the potential issues? How am I going to deal with those issues? And am I cueing or unconsciously helping the dog, in a way that it's not to the benefit of training? Like, a client won't be able to provide those cues. So the dog needs to learn how to do the work without them.
I see. Okay. So do you have any funny stories about some training dogs?
Oh, lots of funny stories about training dogs. My favorite thing about the training dogs are what we call light bulb moments. So it's when you're working, and when we start working with the dogs in the very beginning, we do a ton of repetition and really high rates of reinforcement and reward, right? So it's either food or touch or verbal, something that's really motivating to the dog. We're basically teaching them how to learn and teaching them how to get into learning mode. So then when we transfer that to the work that we do out onto the streets, and you're doing something, you're cueing the dog and you're doing a repetition, you can see that moment where the dog's like, aha, I get it. Like, they understand what you're asking for. And they'll be digging into the harness more, like pulling a little bit harder and like, I got it. Let me do it. And it is so cool to watch those. Like, it's the little light bulb pops on above their head. It's really cool to watch those moments happen, because it's, the dogs, they're learning. They're not afraid to make a mistake because of the environment that we've created for them. They're trying to figure out what it is that you're asking for them. And, it's really fun to watch. So,
yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about too, with that light bulb moment.
Yeah.
I've had plenty of dogs in my life, and whenever, training them, there's just always, some are easier to train, some are harder to train, but you always have that one moment when they just have that, like, how you say it, like the light bulb moment.
Yeah.
They realize, oh, this is how you do it.
This is what you want. Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay, cool. Yeah.
I always did love how, like, dogs are just so much smarter than I think we expect sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, they are aware of kind of like what's going on around us in a certain way. And I love how they're smart enough to be able to coordinate with people, especially on the level that you work with.
It's remarkable. And like I say, almost 30 years into this, I still get surprised by what they can figure out. And if I just be quiet and get out of their way, what they can demonstrate to me, what they know. It's really cool. I can't imagine doing anything else. So they're just so fun to work with. And having those same moments when they're working with the clients too, and as that partnership is gelling, just watching watching those moments. And you with most clients, I'll have a moment at some point where they're cooking down the sidewalk and I'm a little bit behind them because they don't really need me much anymore. And they, you know, they encounter something that's kind of weird or bizarre, and together they figure it out. And I'm like, you know, they're moving through this world a little bit easier. And it's because of the work that, the whole team of us did behind the scenes. And it's special. It's really special.
Nice. So, we're about 20 minutes in. Do you want to take a quick little break for
sure.
some water? All right, cool.
Yeah.
I'm gonna pause. All right, we're back. So, for my next question, I wanted to ask, you mentioned canes before. So what would you say is the difference between a cane and a guide dog?
Yeah, so canes and guide dogs are two of the primary mobility tools that people who are blind or have low vision use. And it's a question I get a lot. What's the difference? And if I had to boil it down to one essence, the cane is an object locator and the dog is an object avoider, right? So a dog will often take you from a curb to a curb, right, for the full block, without contact of anything, and they'll move you laterally around obstacles or anything that's in your way. The cane typically is more, you don't necessarily go curb to curb without contacting anything. The cane will basically, you sweep it in front of you, and the cane will tell you, hey, that there's something in the way, and then you make the decision on how to adjust your line to go around it. That's pretty much the main primary difference. The other thing is, like I said before, I've had clients say, I like the dog because if I happen to get lost or something's confusing or different than what I expected, I've got a pair of eyes and I've got another brain to help problem solve with me. Or even if we are lost or stuck somewhere, it's not as frightening because you've got a partner with you. Another difference is, and this is good or bad depending on your personal perspective. I've had a lot of clients say, when I have my cane, I feel like Moses parting the Red Sea because people are trying to be polite and clear the path for you. But that can sometimes be a little bit socially isolating. A dog can be a really good icebreaker. Lots of people like dogs, and it gives them an opportunity to come up and speak to you, and then you can have that social connection. So, like I said, depending on your viewpoint, that can be a positive or a negative. Sometimes you just need to get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
The cane requires much less maintenance. You get home from your day, you hang your cane on a hook by the door, and you don't have to think about it until you go out again. The dog needs playtime, grooming, feeding and picking up behind it, and you know, I've never heard of a cane getting sick and throwing up on the carpet at 2 a.m. When your cane breaks, you think, oh gosh, got to get another one. You know, there's not that emotional investment. Then if your dog starts to age, if you've had a rough day and you just want to snuggle, cane's not very good at that, you know, whereas if you have a dog, you really have that emotional connection. So there's quite a few differences between the two. And the dog is just much more of it becomes part of your life. I've heard the term the guide dog lifestyle. You know, you're not just a person working with the dog, but you're actually working the guide dog lifestyle. And I like that terminology because it encompasses, it's not just for mobility and getting you from point A to point B. There's a lot of other things that come with having a dog. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I'm here for the clients, and I want to be able to talk to everybody and try to give them a very real understanding of the pros and the cons of a dog and the pros and the cons of a cane. And I'm not about getting a dog in the hands of every single person, but getting the right mobility choice for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Never seen a cane, distracted on a walk by a squirrel.
Mm-hmm. All right. So up next then. So I think this was touched on a little bit before, but just to kind of clarify real quick. So how much does it cost for a person who is blind to, you know, have a guide dog?
Yeah, our costs to get a dog are, we charge $1, right? So obviously there's a significant investment in the dog and getting the dog to the point where it's able to work with a client. But we provide those services at minimal cost so that the cost isn't an obstacle of you getting a dog if you want or you need one. Clients do pay for the cost of food for the dog and vet care. We'll give you some basic sundries when you graduate, you know, a bed and some toys. And I just did a visit with a client and I thought, man, when I die, I want to come back as her dog because he's got like 20 toys that she's gotten them and a couple specialty beds and, you know, and those, so clients do pick up those costs as necessary. But in terms of the receiving the dog and the equipment and all of the training and all of the follow up and aftercare that we provide, that's all provided just for $1.
I see. Yeah, definitely very cost effective and also very relatable because I think we've all been there whenever we do have, you know, a pet and then over time we have like maybe 5 beds for them and over 1,000 toys.
Yes, they tend to multiply. Mm-hmm. So.
All right. So how long does it normally take to train a guide dog?
Yeah, it's quite a process. And, the short answer is it's typically about a 2-year deal. So if we break it down to the individual components, like it all starts before the dogs are even born. We're just really starting to get our breeding program going where we're breeding our own dogs, right? So we have to make a decision. Okay. Who's going to be the female breeder? Who do we select for this? And at its simplest, I will ask my instructors, hey, would you like 100 of these dogs to train as a guide dog? And if they say yes, then that dog's could be a pretty good breeder. Mm-hmm. And then the decision on who to mate that dog with. So you've got the gestation period. When the pups are born, we start socialization with them actually at about 3 days. So it begins with just some really basic handling, getting them used to human touch and being handled. But during that process, they get a lot of socialization, different sounds, different surfaces and noises and smells. And when the puppies are about 8 to 10 weeks old, they will go to a volunteer home that keeps them for about a year. So you've maybe seen guide dog puppies out in the public and they're adorable little blue vests. But those folks are absolutely, vital to our success. They have the puppies for about a year and they take them everywhere with them and they socialize them and get them used to being good citizens out in public and, seeing traffic and seeing shopping malls and heights and just everything that a dog could see as a working dog. And then they invest a lot of time in that dog as well, making sure that they're good in the house. If you have a guide dog that's really good at the guide dog mechanics part of it and is not a well-behaved dog in the house, that's not a very good guide dog, right? They need to be able to be a good pet in the home as well. Mm-hmm. So those families will have that dog 12, 14 months. The formal training process is about 4 months long, right? So that's where the dogs come in and they live with us in the kennels through the week. They get out and work typically a couple times a day with the professional instructors. And that's where they really learn all of the mechanics and how to be a guide dog. And then when those dogs are ready, when they've passed their blindfold tests, we will match them with the clients and then we will work with those clients for typically about 3 weeks. So we'll go out with them typically a couple times a day, start with some pretty basic routes, work on the fundamentals and then build on that. So really, really building for success for both the client and the dog. By the time that team graduates, that dog's approaching 2 years old, right? So you've got that whole process. And so when you're making changes as a person who can be a little impatient and I want my changes now, it can be challenging because the decisions that you make today, you'll see the fruition of that in a couple of years. So it's a long process. There's a ton involved, like with breeding, with puppy raising, those could be their own podcasts themselves, and training. So there's a lot that's involved with that. It takes a lot of energy, a lot of resources, a lot of experience and knowledge. And it's a long process. So yeah, it's a good couple years from, okay, this is what we want to do. And here's the decisions that we're going to make to start moving that way. And you see the fruition of that a couple years later.
I see. Yeah. Just quite an investment in all that.
It really is. Yeah. And it's multi-pronged investments, right? Cause breeding is science and art. Puppy raising is a different type of science. And it's not only training with puppies, but it's teaching people too. Like we really invest in our, the human side of the puppy raising program. Our puppy raising manager has worked as a private dog trainer before, so she's got that experience on, it's not just teaching the dog, but it's training the person how to train the dog. Mm. And a lot of investment in that. And then the technical skills of training the guide dog, and then the technical skills of training the clients to work with the dog, and finding the right instructors that have both of those skill sets, the dog side and the people side. It's a big investment. But it's worth it. The clients make it absolutely worth it.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it's worth it. I mean, sounds like it. You're obviously, you know, talking about how worth it it is.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a little weird.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
All right. So the last question I wanted to ask before we wrap up is, how can our listeners assist Guide Dogs at Texas? Like through donations, foster care families?
Yeah. Yes. Like I said, it costs a lot to train a guide dog, and we keep charges absolutely minimal to the client. So we are very reliant on the support of the public. So the personal private donations, the corporate support, business support and grants. We're always seeking new avenues to make sure that we're financially solvent. And one of my goals for the organization is to really make sure that we're serving our clients for the life of the client. We just put a very sweet little dog with a lovely young woman just outside of Houston, and she's in her 20s, and in 50 years when I'm gone, I want her to come back and get her 7th or 8th or 9th guide dog from us, right? I want to make sure that we're building an organization that stands the test of time and serves the client not for the life of the dog, but for the life of the client. So building towards that and then having the financial resources to do that. The other piece is volunteers, like volunteer puppy raisers. I cannot emphasize enough how much our organization is dependent on those amazing people that they take this 8 to 10 week old little bundle of fur and puppy breath and energy, take it over a year with the socialization and housebreaking and teaching good house manners and, putting that investment into these dogs for us so that we can then turn those dogs into working dogs. We always, always need puppy raisers. So if somebody is interested in learning more about being a puppy raiser or how it works, I'd encourage them to reach out. If you might be interested in supporting on the dog side, but having a puppy full time is overwhelming, we're always looking for foster families as well. So for example, if a puppy raiser's going out of the country for a couple weeks where it's not reasonable to take the pup with them, we're looking for homes that could take that dog on that short-term basis, or have a training dog that needs a two-week break to be able to house dogs just short-term. Those foster families are important as well. And then in general, if people are just looking to volunteer on site, we always have projects that can be done by volunteers. So feel free to reach out. But yeah, donations, puppy raisers, volunteers, those are really the big pieces. And then for potential clients out there, I would encourage to look at our website, guidedogsoftexas.org, to learn more about who we are and what we do. And then if you want any more information as well, feel free to reach out, give us a call or send an email, to learn more about whether a dog would be right for you and what the process looks like.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. I really appreciate the time and the opportunity to get the word out.
Of course. It's great to have you in here as well.
Yeah. Thanks, Matt.
All right. I'm going to do a quick little outro and then we'll wrap up.
Cool.
All right. You have been listening to Interviews with Patrick here on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Again, thank you for listening, and this program will be replayed later after 9 p.m. This is Matthew Thompson, and this is
Patrick Glines,
and we are saying goodbye from Owl Radio.